Hey friends, happy Thursday and welcome back to another episode of the Embodied Podcast. If you guys are loving what you're hearing on the show, I would really appreciate it if you slid over to iTunes and dropped a 5-star rating or a written review, because those really, really help us organically grow the show with no ads, no marketing, and just get the show into more ears and more souls across the world. So if you have already done so, thank you so, so much. And I am so grateful that you are listening to the Embodied Podcast. So on today's episode, I have an amazing interview with one of my classmates, Gabe Gold. So Gabe is, like I said, one of my classmates at Pacifica Graduate Institute. We are both in the Depth and Archetypal Studies program. Gabe has an interest of the intersection between Kabbalah and Jungian psychology, as well as rites of passage in comparative male development. In this podcast episode, we dive deep into the archetypal puer. What is the puer? How it shows up in men, and also we talk a little bit about the puella, which is the female version of the puer. And in this podcast, we really just do a deep dissection, an experiential embodied exploration of the puer. And if you know anything about the puer, it's the eternal boy archetype, and it can be very disembodied and kind of floaty out in the ethers. And so this conversation with Gabe was so incredibly powerful because it really gave us a present moment, here and now, experiential explanation of how to know if you are under the influence of this archetype, if this archetype has moved through you or any of your partnerships ever, and really what to do with it, how to interact with it, how to meet it and meet yourself where you're at if this is something that you have struggled with. So without further ado, on to the show. All right, friends, welcome back to the Embodied Podcast. I am so excited. Gabe, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yeah, so Gabe and I are classmates. We are in a cohort at Pacifica Graduate Institute, and we are navigating the unconscious realms of the psyche. We're about, what, a year in to our program?
Yeah, we're almost a year in, and we still don't know if each other has legs.
Right. Yeah, we've been doing the whole program on Zoom. We're supposed to be doing residentials in person. So once a semester, we're supposed to go to California and hang out and muse with each other. But it's interesting because I feel like through our Zoom residentials, I feel like we have created this community. It's really interesting because I've been on Zoom a lot over the last year, and it's so fascinating how just talking about the things we talk about, exploring the things we explore, how that creates a sense of community. What are your thoughts on that?
I feel that way similarly. And I think it's something about Pacifica.
Yeah.
I think Pacifica is itself. The first time I was there, I mentioned I was in the mythological studies program for a semester before transferring into ours. And my first residential weekend there, didn't know anybody. I met one of my friends, Stuart, who's now a third year in that program. The first thing he said was he came up to me when we were eating lunch outside and kind of peeks his head out from behind the corner of a classroom, and he says, "You're the angel Gabriel and I'm Jesus Christ." And that was my first experience with somebody at Pacifica. Yeah.
That's great.
And he told me that, you know, he really feels that it's an alembic. Pacifica is itself an alembic, which was kind of the alchemical space. So yeah, I do think it actually is an alembic. I think the main curriculum at Pacifica it is a curriculum of the soul. It is a transformative process to be there on your personality. And it's so strong. It even comes through online residentials. I feel that way as well.
Yeah. So the thing that we wanted to explore today was the archetypal pu'er. So for those who have listened to the podcast for a long time, I don't think that I've ever really unpacked this on the show. So this will be an exciting episode, but I'm really going to offer this space to you, Gabe, because you have talked a lot throughout our cohort about you consciously coming to grips with this being an archetype that influences you heavily in your life. So can you, as much as you can with an archetype, can you explain to the audience what we mean when we say pu'er?
Sure. I wanna start out by saying that Daryl Sharp, who's a Jungian analyst, and he's written some stuff that you could find about the pu'er line, right away says the pu'er is an indescribable experience for a man. So being able to talk about it is a little bit difficult, but we'll take a stab at it.
Yeah.
First things first, what I want to say is I want to bring it back to like, I want to bring it back down to earth, okay, which is very important for the pu'er. And talk about, that's a very archaic name, pu'er aeternus. You know, it's something that originally we're talking about, that's a child god of antiquity. And really though, in 2021, we call the pu'er the fuckboy. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that on this podcast.
You are.
That's a way to make it really relatable. The chances are that when you're encountering fuckboys and when they're doing their magic, they're actually completely identified with pu'er and they don't even know that they're doing that. So that's that. That's that. And it allows hopefully everyone to have a little bit more compassion for them instead of being so turned off. It's so easy to be turned off by them. On the other hand, the pu'er is typically somebody, it's typically a term for the adult man who has too long remained living in an adolescent psychology. And he has such a tremendous fear of being pinned down to reality and being trapped and acknowledging limitation. So typically these men are poets and they're dreamers and they're amazing word technicians and they'll enchant you and they say a whole lot, but never really say nothing of significance if you get down to it. But Mary Louise von Franz talks about them. They kind of bubble like champagne. And when they walk into a room, everybody is like, wow, I'm charmed by this person. If you get into a relationship with the pu'er, it's a little bit difficult because it's always a chase. So another term used in conjunction with pu'er, they're always talking about Don Juanism. Don Juanism is the tendency for men to always be jumping around from partner to partner. They jump around from partner to partner because in the beginning, before any this concept and this issue is addressed with them, they don't realize it. But what they are so in love with is their fantasy. So they project their fantasy of the ideal onto some object in the environment. And they chase and they chase and they chase. And they're so in love with the thrill of that. It makes them feel so alive, where usually the rest of their life, and now this is kind of talking from personal experience, where the rest of life could feel either dark, grim, or just unbearable and very difficult. When that gets channeled into the chase of the woman, suddenly the darkness just becomes so vivid. Life is colorful again. And there's so much meaning in that. And as we know, it's this classic story where then they'll get to know somebody and their projection will be dissolved. They'll see through it. Maybe they're, you know, everything could be going perfectly fine. I'm actually watching this amazing movie right now. I'm analyzing it for one of our papers. It's called The Favorite Game. And it was a movie based off of a book of Leonard Cohen's called The Favorite Game. And in it, it the protagonist is this one poet puer named Leo Braveman. And the first scene of this movie is him in a hotel room with a woman, and they're passionately making love. And suddenly she says, "Oh, I could just be here forever." And then
Puer's worst nightmare.
Puer's worst. And then his whole demeanor changes. He kind of, his head, you know, drops down. He sulks off to the bathroom and he lights a cigarette and he just looks at himself in the mirror. I mean, this is a reality. I mean, it's exaggerated, but that experience of suddenly having the ideal become something that could trap you or feel like it could trap you is the Puer's worst fear. I'll leave it there if you want to comment on that. And there's much more to talk about.
Yeah, I think that was great. That was a really great down-to-earth explanation. So that just, I think, shows how much you've worked on your own Puer energy. You've integrated it. I'm curious, though, like, I think it's, you know, we bump up against the things in which have affected us the most in our lives. And so, like, when did you start to, like, bump up against your own, like, when did you become conscious of, like, oh, I think that this pattern is a problem and this is affecting my life, if you want to share that on the podcast?
Sure. That's a great question. And that's the thing with this stuff. It's not a problem until you find yourself in a situation where there's an external demand that prohibits a certain behavior pattern, right? And then what was kind of just the instincts, letting themselves be the instincts and acting upon them, suddenly you realize, oh, I can't do that because it would have consequences. For me, that was the relationship with my girlfriend. My girlfriend, who I've been with for the last year and a half, who I love so much, and she's been so important for me in our relationship, is not something I don't necessarily want to sacrifice right now. And that meant, though, well, I couldn't do these certain things. I couldn't fall in love with other people. You know, I couldn't act on that. And one by one, I remember for the first like 8 months of our relationship, Thea would just point out these things that I was doing to always give myself another option or a way out, completely unconscious. Whether it was kind of like, it wasn't necessarily, I wasn't cheating on her, but it was maybe I was developing an erotic friendship. You know, it was just right on the border. There was a lot of excitement. There was looking forward to talking with them. What's interesting though for me, and this is very personal, and I'm okay to talk about it. For me, and this is very Puer-like, so it's hard to even say mine, or is this the Puer thing? I guess I take responsibility for it. But I always found myself completely in love with women from a different country. Let's say if I was on a vacation or something and I would bump into someone, she was Parisian, she was English, she was Italian. I never had to actually had contact with them. I mean, it was just, there was such a distance. So the whole entire relationship could be preserved in my imagination. It could be preserved within fantasy. Because it was a far distance, there was never the interaction, the daily interaction that would slowly erode away the projection. So that was the perfect thing for me. I could say, no, I'm in this amazing relationship, but it wasn't actually a relationship. It was me relating to my own fantasy. And it never lasted long. My first girlfriend was the same thing, from Montreal. And that was a big step for me, because Montreal's not too far from Chicago. So Theo would start to point all this stuff out, and I realized how much I was struggling with it, struggling not just with temptation, but with the whole commitment to relationship and being a human being and dealing with feelings, dealing with frustration, relating to another person authentically, instead of just as a persona. And one of the things I talk about in male groups is the sort of grief that comes with differentiating from the Puer. Because even if the pattern was completely destructive for you for so long of your life, and for me it was 14 years old, and it's really when I started to kind of develop this, like, this pattern, this addiction to this pattern. It came originally through TV shows, and looking back on my life, all the TV shows that I became obsessed with had characters that were very puer-like. And as I aged, those characters were this at the core, they were the same, but they sort of matured along the way. The first one at 14 was like Vincent Chase from Entourage. And then it would go to Hank Moody from Californication. And then, you know, when I really grew up, it was Leonard Cohen. So all these people sort of had this similar core, but they were maturing along a certain level. Anyways, the grief comes from parting ways with this pattern that has been there to support you and to make you feel comfortable in the face of just an uncontrollable situation or other people that the experience of them is so uncertain. So when you part ways in this, there's a lot of loss and there's a lot of grief I experience with it.
Yeah, I can imagine that would be really tough. It's interesting because I'm so excited to do this episode because my fiance also has identified with the queer energy and he knows that about himself. So I definitely have a firsthand experience with relating to everything that you're saying. I'm like, oh yes, I can see how that's played out in his experience. But that grief component, and also that we're doing a podcast on the embodied podcast, right? So like, how is that with, you know, it seems to me as if for the puer, being in touch with the body and the here and now seems a little bit like a darker shadow element. Like it's maybe a little bit tougher to be in the body. Can you speak to your experience or what you know about that?
Absolutely. And I'll start with a little bit of theory behind the reason why. So this is a classical Jungian view of it, okay, which is different from Hillman's view of the puer, which I'll get at later. The classical Jungian view is this. The puer is sort of a symptom, and it's sort of a symptom of an injury that took place early on in the relationship between son and mother. And the son, as a consequence of this, is now too mother bound. So what the young son does is he learns early on, okay, I'm sort of freaked out by mom. Maybe I'm feeling too invaded. Maybe I'm feeling too neglected, whatever, you know, your poison might've been. Where is one place I could feel safe? Okay. Especially from an invasive mother. Where's one place I could feel safe? Well, it's in my mind. I could fly away up into my mind and spend my day just thinking about very metaphysical concepts, thinking about poetry, thinking about all these philosophies. And what the puer is doing, he's actually playing off the underdeveloped animus. This is the theory behind it, the underdeveloped animus in the mother. In psychologically, that underdeveloped animus cannot penetrate, okay, the realm of metaphysics. And this is mm-hmm. something that von Franz talks about. So the child realizes, oh, this is my haven. I'm going to stay in here. And that's why puers are typically amazing artists and amazing dreamers. And that's why it's associated with renewal and all this creative stuff. But eventually, if you're too identified with it, of course, it comes to a point in your life when it could be destructive. Now, the cure, the classical Jungian remedy for it is actually earth. The puer is too skybound, so you have to balance it out with more earth. That means getting in touch with the body. Puers typically don't even know they have bodies. I mean, they're just floating heads. They're just floating ideas with all this stuff. So you got to get them into their body, which is obviously a difficult experience because for a majority of the time, it's associated with either a trauma or with just an underdeveloped eros and all that stuff. So, and the body also has a lot of limitations, you know? So the puer hates that. The puer hates to feel confined within a body. Mm-hmm. So my experience of it was, and this is something that I sought out intuitively starting about 3 years ago, when I started a career in farming And then I started really getting into a meditation practice earlier than that, but it really incorporating the somatic part of it was about 3 years. My experience of it is it's a daily struggle. It's a daily practice. I mean, I have to always be coming back to my body, and I've had to learn how to feel at 27 years old feelings. You know, it's something that is just not a given. And my experience of kind of learning how to feel again and feeling safe with feelings, you know, and feeling like, wow, I could actually experience certain sensations, not act on them, and it will be okay. The hardest part for me, and I think for all Don Juans and all puers that are really attached to this certain behavior, is learning how to contain the feeling of temptation and lust when you're in a partnership and that's prohibited. To be able to learn how to contain that without acting that out, kind of in a compulsive way, either through porn or through sex or through a dating app or something like that, just to get it out, because the feeling is there's so much tension. So really learning how to feel that again is a way that all puers have to work with each other.
It's interesting because as you're speaking on this, I'm just thinking about all of the different ways and strategies in which this person who is influenced by this archetype, where this feeling function becomes carried by other sources through poetry, through music, through their partnership, through, I don't know if you've read the book, it's like the, I don't know, it's something about the kaleidoscope of porn or something like that. But it's about, no, it's called The Lost Goddess, The Kaleidoscope of Porn. It's written by a Jungian, from a Jungian lens. And, you know, how this feeling function is being carried by this, like, goddess on this screen, this projected goddess. And I am curious, like, the kind of the mundane of the relationship. Like, how can you, something that we talked off air about is talking about sex and monogamy and how hard that can be when you're starting to pull back the projections of your feeling function being carried outside of yourself. So can you speak on that and how to navigate that space?
Yeah. You just have to develop it. You have to keep recognizing the ways that you're kind of pushing it off of yourself and bring it back to yourself. I'm very new into the process. I can't speak about it as you know, from the other side of it just yet. One of the things that piqued my interest in what you said was the whole role that porn plays into this. And that's a serious thing. When I'm talking to clients or to other men that are dealing with this problem, the first thing I recommend, and I don't advocate for any celibacy or abstinence. I think it's very important to experiment. And I think you learn a lot about yourself that way. But when you're trying to recover from puer possession, the porn needs to be cut out. That's one of the first things that needs to be cut out. Not only is it the crack cocaine of erotic imagery, and we know from science, it completely transforms your brain and messes with the dopamine circuits and everything like that, but it preserves the kind of the whole women are supposed to be goddesses thing, and my eroticism now could only be attached to a goddess and not to a human. That's one of the reasons why it's interesting to hear that Jungian analyst was talking about the feeling function being carried within porn stars. I could understand that partly. Where I went to right away was, it's actually, there's no feeling there whatsoever. Because especially with porn, it's such a mentalization. It's only taking place within the image function. So you don't have to feel. And that's why puers are embodied. And that's one of the reasons why many men who are kind of, they have this, they're Don Juans and they have this whole pattern. They could fall genuinely in love with someone, genuinely want to give themselves to someone. The minute the relationship becomes sexualized and intimate, everything recedes back into the background. And they lose attraction and they become like riddled with fear and everything. it's because that intimacy, that human to human connection, I think that's what activates the feeling function. I think porn is a way to discharge the instinct and the impulse without needing to feel. So that was interesting to hear that.
Yeah, so it's interesting because you mentioned intimacy, right? Like, I feel like that would really start move us into the spectrum of going down into like connecting at a soul level with another individual, right? Like that down and in connection instead of just like this projecting of images. But I'm just thinking about this. Is affect and emotion the bridge between the image and like the body? What do you think about that?
I think it's spot on. I know that Eric Neumann talks about how there are really two parts to this whole dance, and one is sort of the image part, and then the other is the emotional dynamic component, and those two things need to be bridged for wholeness to be achieved, and for that's therapy right there. I would say that's spot on.
So when you look at, if you feel comfortable answering this, so when you are learning how to look at your partner through the human lens, initially, like, how is that process, right? Because I feel like there can be a lot of, at first it's perhaps the goddess, but then maybe it turns into like witch energy, or maybe it turns into terrible mother energy. Everything. Yeah, like explain, like share, if you want to share your experience of how that pulling back the projection has shifted in your process.
Oh, I mean, it's 100% psychotic. That's what it is. Every single image Thea has carried for me, it's not an exaggeration. Every single image will be carried by partners many times, maybe even many times throughout the day sometimes. I mean, depending on how fluttered you are, and if you wake up on the wrong side of the bed and you're doing an active work on a certain piece and everything, that stuff will get over there. The experience with Thea, which I think is funny, her name means goddess. It's clever like that, you know? I couldn't have possibly made, I almost feel like my progress with this is 50-50. Half of it is because of her. And I try to say that really from a human point of view, you know? And I don't think Puerz can recover without a strong woman, you know, that are in that type of relationship. For one, she has maintained the boundary. Here's the thing about the puer, okay? I guess I'll start off with Hillman's view of the puer. Hillman's view of the puer is that it's opposite of the classical Jungian viewpoint. His view is that it's not so much a mother-bound problem, it's actually a father-bound problem. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the puer isn't so much a symptom or something like that. Not the puer as an archetype, but puer behavior isn't so much a symptom of a problem that needs to be resolved, but rather it's something to be understood and as psyche's way of luring an ego towards a marriage inside. Okay. And you know, he's written many books, a whole uniform edition about the Senex and the Puer and everything like that. Now, I am a bit suspicious of James Hillman. Okay.
Because... I love this. I love this just critical conversation that we can chat about it. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm a bit suspicious about James Hillman from what I've read. And I'll tell you, it's sort of like we say in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it takes a bullshitter to know a bullshitter. I'm not saying that he's a bullshitter, like, you know, everything, let's write off everything. But this is what I do know for my own work with the puer, is that the puer will and can create a whole entire school of psychology just to justify his viewpoint. He will do that. It will. And so when I read that, I say, it sounds great. Something in me lights up. Something in me lights up. It feels like something is justified. You know, it feels like something is validated. I can't trust that at this point in my life. Mm. I just can't. I can't really trust my own thoughts and my feelings right now at this time in my life, which is why luckily, you know, I have a lot of mentors and I could say, you know, what do I do right now? And I trust in them. So I do that. But from my experience, especially in this sphere, if I follow that, I'll probably end up in a situation where I have figured out a really clever way to kind of shrimp out of all the responsibility that I now have, you know, mm-hmm. and it will be all under the illusion that I'm following my development. That's the pu'er for you. The pu'er will like it, it. The biggest fear I believe, because the pu'er is associated with renewal, it has spirit in it. So there is a motivation that's sincere. It does want you to grow. It does want you to develop. You know, it really wants you to self-actualize and experience the fullness and vividness of life. It does. It's true. But it knows that. And the Buddhists call that a rhino horn wound. And it's almost like, you know, the archetypal power will actually flood through that and invade consciousness without any ego barrier there to kind of like mitigate that. So it's not just, oh, I have human desire, you know, I have the desire of a god, you know, oh, I don't just want one girlfriend, I want a million wives, you know, I want all of this, I want it all now, and I deserve it, you know, and it comes from a place that's so deep and so righteous. You gotta wonder, you're like, what is this talking right now, you know, because it believes itself. Yeah. But it's not human, and following that will actually just lead to rack and ruin.
That's really, really fascinating. I'm just like stewing on all of the things that you have said thus far. I do feel like there is this relativization of ego to these archetypal influences that has to occur, that when you spoke about grief earlier, I'm like, I'm sure there's like some of these parts of self that are kind of going through a death and rebirth process and trying to be reborn. You know, I've heard it's from a different perspective, and it was not necessarily focused on pu'er in general, but I was listening to a talk by Marianne Woodman, who is really focused on the body, but she was speaking about eating disorders and addictions associated with exercise and eating. And she was speaking about how when certain individuals are growing up, the parents can put this standard, this expectation on the child that is of an archetypal level, that is so incredibly high, that no child could ever embody, like no child could ever reach that no matter how hard they tried. And so it's just this striving towards an archetype until he or she just becomes swallowed by it. And that creates this kind of gap between the fantasy she talks about perfection, but this fantasy of perfection and just the mundane here and now, and that coming to grips with coming back into the here and now. I think that is present in a lot of addictions, and I think it's present in a lot of perfectionism, a lot of striving for things outside of yourself. What is your experience with you, your personal experience, but working, being surrounded by different individuals, studying individuals, do you feel like that's something that perhaps takes place, is like this young children being held to this archetypal expectation?
Yeah, absolutely, especially for us moderns. I mean, there's so little understanding of it, of the role of the transpersonal in the human frame, that what's happening to parents is it goes on both ends. I mean, we know through human development that in the beginning, in the first 7 years of life, the child is actually completely one with the mother's sphere of consciousness and the parent's unconscious. And the parents, too, they're holding the transpersonal energies for the kid. And sometimes we could be 30 years old and still be relating to archetypal parents, superimpose onto our actual parents. The same thing goes for parents and their children. And I would say the mother-son relationship is particularly susceptible to this because this is mother's little boy. So there is this, the mom will be looking, holding the boy as this is not just my son. This is the son. This is the son of God. This is the divine child. My baby is the most special, important thing ever. It's the, right? That whole thing. But that's great, but that gets carried into later life. And that is in a lot of puers histories, the feeling that they were idealized to an inappropriate extent by their moms, that it's got a little icky at a certain point. I think a lot of this is attributed to just the state of unfulfilled marriages and unfulfilled sexual marriages and the repressed sexuality in the culture. The repressed sexuality of the within the marriage, if that's not being fulfilled and sustained and contained and everything like that, it will naturally, it's uncomfortable to talk about, but we got to talk about more. It will naturally spill out onto the child of opposite sex for mom and for dad. And you see this a lot too with dads and their daughters, where once the daughters reach a certain age when it's puberty and they start to develop breasts, they'll lose connection with their fathers. The fathers get intimidated because they start to feel stirred in a strange way. It's completely normal, right? But they haven't had any education on this. They're terrified of that. They're guilty. They're ashamed of that. They don't have anyone to talk to. So what they do is they actually just cut out all of it completely. They haven't developed their sexuality at all. And then they leave the relationship with their daughters emotionally, psychologically.
That is so incredibly fascinating. I am thinking about just the different dynamics that with mother, son, father, daughter, mother, daughter. So it's interesting because I heard someone say somewhere, I can't quote it, but it's almost that like a mother-daughter relationship as if the young girl is an extension of herself, and the young boy is like he like you said, it's mine. He's mine. I own him.
Son lover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting the different dynamics that can unfold for a different if you identify with a different gender. It's interesting what you said about father daughter because for me it's interesting because I would identify as perhaps on the side of the Puella in some ways, but I feel like I definitely have integrated that in a way that my feet have been on the ground for a long time. But it showed up more for me as like this more compliance and obedience and not taking responsibility for the fulfillment of forwarding my life. And it's interesting what you said about father daughters because my dad and I were so tight until I got my first serious boyfriend. And then it was like,
Yeah.
he. Like see ya, like just emotionally absent, out, like gone. And it's so interesting how that can play itself out. I actually have, for any women out there who are listening, The book, The Wounded Woman by Linda Leonard, really good book, healing the father-daughter relationship. But she writes about the Puella, which is the female, feminine side of this. But she says here, but the disadvantages of such feminine lifestyle are abound too, talking about the Puella. The eternal girl often gives up her independence and settles for a passive dependent life rather than developing herself on a personal and professional level, rather than working out her own identity, rather than finding out who she really is through the difficult task of self-transformation. The eternal girl usually gains her identity from the projections that others have placed upon her.
It's a powerful passage. It's the same thing. It's always important to bring up the Puella, because the Puella is talked about less than the Puer, and the Puella also exists. So I'm glad that you brought that up. For the Puer, it is also an attempt to remain forever in that passive dependent state.
Mm-hmm.
The Puer shadow is the Senex, which is another fancy term we give to use to talk about the development of behaviors and a part of the personality that is disciplined and controlled and committed. You know, the Puer, you talk to a lot of Puers. This is something that's really interesting. They're associated with flight, which is why Peter Pan has been ascribed to it. And planes, and their dreams are full of planes, or their dreams are full of bars and prison cells and everything like that, because they're afraid to be imprisoned. For their experience of life itself and incarnation is actually that of imprisonment. And I've experienced this for myself during, you know, somatic practices, when I'm actually feeling my body. And let's say if I'm really present in my body, it feels like I want to scream, because I'm locked in this flesh. You know, that's the poor just wants to fly away. So Puers will typically say things. They're always jumping from city to city, and they live what is called the provisional life, okay? Meaning that they're only living for the present moment. And if it's not, they'll become completely enchanted and fascinated by something. They'll say, oh, this is what I'm meant to do. I'm meant to be an actor. Or no, I'm meant to be a writer. And then they'll try writing for a little bit, and then reality comes into them. They realize it's frustrating, and you're not as good as you thought. And sometimes they actually won't even write at all, because to actually confront the reality of the stuff that I actually write is not as good as the stuff I imagined I would write is too painful. So sometimes they're just, you know, forever blocked artistically. But they'll get into something and they'll realize, oh, actually, this isn't what I wanted. I think I wanted to be a chemist. Yeah, oh, chemistry, the periodic table. And oh my God, it's so amazing. And Nobel Prize, that's what I want to do. Oh, I'm going to do that. And they'll look up PhD programs and how to get into this. They'll have no background in it, but they'll just kind of, you know, do that. And then they'll start to learn, and it's not really for me. Maybe it's the city. Yeah, you know, it's the city. I've never liked it here. It's too rainy. You know, but before that, they were fantasizing about Portland or something like that, right? So they're always jumping from place to place. And the point that I wanted to make was, if you ask them to tell you their reasons why, they'll just attribute it to the yearning of their soul. There will be no rational reason. They'll just say, I feel it. I feel it in my guts. Yeah, I can't explain why. It's not a rational thing. I can't explain, but it's just alive, and it's here, and it's now, and we got to take it. Now, the Senex, on the other hand, is someone, you know, a part of you that would say, well, let's think this through, you know, yep. let's think this through. Is that really a good idea? Could this be a pattern? I know you said you didn't like this, but you committed to it. You should finish this. You know, you never finish things. This is very interesting. Until I was about 23 years old, it occurred to me that I never finished a glass of water. I never finished a drink fully. I'm not kidding. Whenever I had a drink of anything, there would always be that much remaining. Always. I never finished it. there, and looking back on it, I actually remember, I could recall like the feeling of those moments, that final sip. And it was more than just, oh, my thirst is quenched. It was like, I can't, I don't want to. Interesting, right? Interesting.
The how symbolism that, like, appears. Of that is incredible.
Yeah, never finished. It was like the daughter from the movie Signs. Like, I just had these like glasses of water everywhere.
Man, that is so fascinating. Well, Gabe, we are coming up on almost the hour mark. So I'm going to try to like pull this in. So tell us any advice that you have out there. I know that you've hit on the things that you've experienced, the suggestions for different parts of working with the puer, but any advice that you have for someone out there who is like listening to this podcast, whether it's puer or puella, the eternal girl or the eternal boy, like what are just first steps into working with this energy? What advice do you have for these individuals who might be struggling with some of these things?
First part is to seriously get your values in order, or to begin asking yourself those questions. You know, what is actually important to me? What life do I want to live for myself? Because the thing about this, it's in your control. I mean, you're going to become the person that you want to become, you know, and to say, well, it's all just fate, you know, and it's fate. That's puer. Mm-hmm. That's puer. So take a moment and acknowledge, you know, where you're at and ask yourself, is this a problem in my life? Do I like it? Because the puer is not a problem to the one who's not bound to any responsibility. You know, if that's the case, enjoy it. That's what the puer is there for, I believe. You know, when you come to a junction in your life, you say, okay, I'm feeling like it's time to make the next step. That's when all the work has to begin with it. And all those behaviors and feelings, those won't go away, but they have to be balanced. And what you balance it with is the development of the Senex. And is the development of what Robert Moore would call for male development, the warrior, the archetype of the warrior, which is Robert Moore's model. His archetypes are a little bit different than the Jungian archetypes in the sense where they're a huge umbrella of behaviors and instincts. The warrior is someone who acknowledges limitation, is willing to actually suffer and is willing to struggle to get to a certain place. The puer does not want to suffer at all. And to find yourself, believe it or not, good work. It a lot of good work and a good relationship. It's sort of like the Cat Stevens song, find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. You know, you are young, but that's your fault. A large community of men that are working with this, you absolutely need community. You need community because these powers and everything, they're so unbelievably strong and they are so seductive that they will whisper things in your ear. They know your weak parts and they know where, you know, they're going to get you to bend, and they'll tell you that, and they'll fill you with these things that are telling you that what I'm doing is actually right. In that moment, it might feel, it doesn't mean it's actually the right thing to do for who you want to become. That's the blessing, I think, with working of differentiating from the puer, is it's just a crash course in becoming a man for the male working with puer. It's a crash course in accepting responsibility for your life, because for the puer, everything is going to be brought to him on a silver platter. In time, all these things will come, you know, and it's not the reality. The Senex understands that. The Senex understands, no, it takes your work. You have to choose to do this. You have to work every single moment and choose how you want to live your life and build that part of your personality. don't expect it just to come, because it won't. You may be waiting for a long time.
Yeah. So I was reading this article. I'm just going to wrap up with this. I was reading this article that this lady was talking about how in feminine psychology, there are the maiden, the mother, the crone, but in Hillman's psychology, for example, it's just the puer and senex. There's no third principle. And she was suggesting implementing the father in the middle of the puer and the senex as the mediating principle. And what just kind of struck me was how incredibly popular Jordan Peterson has become in the past few years, where in our culture, I think we just have a ton of puer energy floating through the culture, and how incredibly popular Jordan Peterson has become. And his shit isn't simple. Like it's complex and tough to understand sometimes, but there is a tie to the spirit, but it is grounded in that very discriminating, discerning, ordered way that I feel like could be the mediating principle between the two.
That's a wonderful comment. I completely agree with that. Jordan Peterson, we would say in Kabbalah, is very Gevura, you know, and that's the thing, actually, that is the medicine for the puer, according to the classical Jungian model. And it's amazing to watch young men, okay, or any man, they could be 40, 50 years old, but when they're confronted and when they're met when they're met sort of with that senex and that fatherly principle of, you want me to hold your hand right now? I can't do that for you. You got to get out and get it yourself. You know, when they kind of leave the Rogerian counseling room and they kind of come into something that's a little bit more head on, it's like, you actually don't need to talk about this right now. You gotta dig this hole, man. Go dig this hole. We don't have time to talk about this. That's the medicine they needed. You know, because what that does is it activates something within them. It resonates. It's, oh, wow, somebody's not treating me like I'm fragile right now. You know, someone's really, they're speaking to a part of me. What part is that? You know, what, that feels good, though. That feels good. That's that fatherly principle. And it's not abusive power. It's nothing like that. But it is, you got to get your butt into the world.
Yeah.
You got to get into the world, and you could do it. You could do it. You know, it's that, it's empowerment, and it's being pushed, and it's coming home, and it's crying, and it's saying, you know, yep, it's a tough life, right? But you could do it. You got to get back up. You know, it's that. And that's really, that's what the puer needs to go find, a mentor that could respect him enough to actually treat him like that. And just for a little bit, understand that the reactions of pain and suffering with that, it's just coming from his puer. But, and then in a little bit, if he keeps getting pushed and if he keeps staying committed to it, and if the desire is there, there will, a differentiation will occur. It always does. The psyche wants to grow, and that part of you wants to grow. It just, it has to sometimes get squeezed and go through a ring of fire.
Yeah, and the alchemical fire.
Alchemical fire.
Yeah, that is a perfect place to wrap it up. Gabe, great. Thank you for coming on the Embody podcast and sharing all of your experience, all of your wisdom that you've gained from your experience, and really just jamming on the theories and the concepts. But also, I think you did an amazing job of keeping your feet on the ground with this. So sometimes hard to do that when you're talking about archetypes and archetypal elements. So thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure. We'll be right back.